这是一块啊，也出名出来了。
Boy.
No, I don't think so.
Better put on a nice shirt.
Alright, Rabotai, the starting is here.
Today's topic is Tchiyas HaMisim and Olam Haba. And I want to give a prelude to this topic by telling a story that happened or that I heard a number of years ago when I was learning in yeshiva. I'm still learning in yeshiva, but I was learning in yeshiva then also, and my Rebbe wanted to move on from the sugya that he was covering to the next sugya. And one of my chavirim protested. He said, Rebbe, how can we move on to the next sugya? You haven't yet spoken out the amazing Briska Rav on this sugya. And so my Rebbe answered him, said, the Briska Rav already said it, so why do I have to say it? I want to move on to the next sugya and say the things that haven't been said yet. Now, this is not the most original line. It sounds very original, but the Rambam already wrote this. The Rambam was challenged for something that he omitted from his Yad HaChazaka, from the 8th parak of Hilchos Teshuvah. And in response, the Rambam wrote that the goal of my Sefer, or at least of that chapter in Hilchos Teshuvah, was not to repeat things that everybody knew, that everybody already had access to, but rather was to correct certain misperceptions that were commonly held by the people of the time. And therefore, those truths which everyone at the time already understood, already subscribed to, the Rambam did not emphasize them, or perhaps even neglected to mention them, in the 8th parak of Hilchos Teshuvah. And it was only those things which he felt that people were unaware of, and that they needed to be informed about, that he included in that parak. So what was this glaring omission that so many people took the Rambam to task for? The Rambam in Hilchos Teshuvah Parakhes writes about Olam Haba. We'll read it inside later in this year. The Rambam writes that Olam Haba is a world without physical bodies. It's a world of the soul. Only the soul is there. Nothing physical, no arms, no legs, no mouth, nothing. Just souls in Olam Haba. And the Rambam did not mention in that particular chapter the concept of Tchiyas HaMisim, of the resurrection of the dead, which we understand to mean that people will come back, the souls will go back into their bodies at some future time. And so some people took issue with the Rambam, and they said maybe the Rambam, Chas v'Chalila, denied Tchiyas HaMisim, that he only mentioned Olam Haba, which is a world of souls, and he did not mention Tchiyas HaMisim. So maybe Chas v'Chalila, this is how some people read or misread the Rambam, that the Rambam denies Tchiyas HaMisim. The Rambam, however, in a letter, and also in the Perush HaMishnayos, corrects this misconception. He begins by stating that the goal of Perek Ches of Hilchos Teshuvah, again, was not to give a comprehensive overview of what's going to be in the end of days. Rather, the goal of Perek Ches of Hilchos Teshuvah was to correct some popular misconceptions. And since the existence, the reality, the truth of Tchiyas HaMisim was properly perceived by all the people in his generation, he didn't feel the need to include reference to Tchiyas HaMisim in Perek Ches of Hilchos Teshuvah. The Rambam does allude to Tchiyas HaMisim in other places in the Yad HaChazaka. He mentions it very explicitly, and so whoever accused the Rambam of not believing in Tchiyas HaMisim obviously had not read the Rambam very thoroughly. However, these accusations against the Rambam gave rise to a very significant body of literature, which we're hopefully going to study some inside and to summarize others today. First of all, we just have to go through the background. What is the most explicit source in Tanakh for the concept of Tchiyas HaMisim? Daniel. It's Sefer Daniel, precisely. The Gemara in Sanhedrin brings a number of sources for Tzkiyas HaMisim, most of which are allusions. They're inferences from words or plays on words in Chamisha Chumshei Torah. However, the Rambam writes this in a letter that the most explicit source for Tzkiyas HaMisim, and everyone can look it up, is the last pasuk in Sefer Daniel, where an angel says to Daniel, he says, now you're going to pass on, and then you will rise again together with all the righteous people at the end of days. So it's very, very explicit. There's no way to allegorize it, to reinterpret it, to attribute it to a dispute. An angel says to Daniel, and it is recorded in Tanakh, in the 24 Sfarim of Tanakh, that Daniel is going to pass on, and he will rise again with all the righteous at the end of days. So Tzkiyas in the eschaton, that's the noun form of eschatological. The eschaton. E-S-C-H-A-T-O-N. It's a word that I like, but I can never use because most people don't understand it. So now that you have brought it up, I can keep on using it for the duration of this year.
I don't think much you like it.
Never mind. It's like Moses spoke. You know, it's Moshe Rabbeinu, it's not Moses.
So this is the explicit Makar, which the Rambam says there is no way that a person can allegorize it. There's no way that a person can contradict it. It's an explicit pasuk that Tzkiyas HaMisim will happen, that the bodies which pass on will be reconstituted, will be resurrected in the end of days, in the eschaton. So let's just move on from there. There is, however, within this idea of Tzkiyas HaMisim, there is still room for dispute. And there was one fundamental dispute that really occupied the Rishonim and it generated a tremendous amount of writing and of clarification of the statements that Chazal made with regard to Tzkiyas HaMisim. And that Machlokas and Rishonim concerns Olam Haba. Olam Haba is something which is different from Tzkiyas HaMisim, and we'll explain in just a moment. There is the following history of the future. Right now, we are in Olam Hazeh. We're in this world. After Olam Hazeh will come an era, a period of time that's known as Yemos HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach. There's a dispute that we'll get to about what will precisely be the character of Yemos HaMashiach. But it's clear that the next era, after the era that we're in now, the Ikvasad Mashiach, will be the Yemos HaMashiach, the days of Mashiach. And following the days of Mashiach will come another era called La'asid Lavo, or Olam Haba. It's a third era of history. There's Olam Hazeh, which will be followed by Yemos HaMashiach, which in turn will be followed by Olam Haba. And that's something which is explicit in Chazal's, and again, none of the Rishonim dispute this particular progression of history. However, the question is, what is the nature of Yemos HaMashiach, and what is the nature of Olam Haba? And the dispute to which I'm referring to concerns Olam Haba. The Rambam, as we already mentioned, writes that Olam Haba will be a world of the soul, where the souls sit and derive pleasure from their proximity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Rambam says there will be no bodies in Olam Haba. In contrast, the Ramah, Rav Meir Halevi Abulafia, was one of the Bali Plugta, one of those who were Gedolim of towering stature, similar to the Ravid, who sometimes disagreed with the Rambam. The Ramah writes that there will be bodies in Olam Haba. Olam Haba will be very similar in that sense to the Yemos HaMashiach, in that those bodies that are resurrected, whenever they will be resurrected, beginning sometime during the Yemos HaMashiach and going onwards throughout Yemos HaMashiach till Olam Haba, those bodies that are resurrected will continue on into Olam Haba and will live forever. We'll get there in a moment.
But Olam Haba, the Tzvi is talking about, is going to be on earth. As Lavil and Shamayim, we have now that somebody passed away, the Shama resides upset. You don't call it. How would he call it right now? It's not Olam Haba.
He would not call that Olam Haba.
I would just call
it Olam HaNeshamot, perhaps.
Olam HaNeshamot, okay.
So this is the Ramah. Now, what about the Rambam? What does the Rambam think will happen after Tchiyas HaMesim? After all, if there will be a Tchiyas HaMesim, let's say for the time being that the Tchiyas HaMesim will take place during the Yemos HaMashiach, during that middle stage in history, then all of these souls will be reunited with their bodies. So then if Olam Haba, which comes after Yemos HaMashiach, will not have bodies, so what will happen to all those bodies that were resurrected during Tchiyas HaMesim, during Yemos HaMashiach? So the Rambam says, very simple, those bodies will pass away. Just like the bodies that we're in now will pass away and the souls will go to the Olam HaNishamot, so too the bodies that are resurrected during the Yemos HaMashiach will also pass away, and then that will lead, it will transition into a world, into an Olam Haba, a world to come, which is a world only of souls.
No Olam Hazeh at that time?
There will be, Olam Hazeh is a stage of history.
Right. Everyone has it away, and everyone who's here now, so in the Beis HaMikdash will be in Olam HaNeshamos?
It will be in Olam HaNeshamos, yes. That's, the Rambam says, no physicality to Olam Haba. No physicality. So that is the Rambam's position. The Rambam says that the bodies are going to pass away when Olam Haba arrives, and it will be a world only of souls. Now the Rambam is basing himself on the following statement of the Gemara Brachos, which is the first source on the sheet over here. The first source. The Gemara tells us, Margala Bifume de Rav. It was a pearl in the Rav, in the mouth of Rav. He would tell this to everyone because he felt that it was an important theological statement that everyone should be familiar with, so he would constantly say it over. And what would he constantly say? Lo ke'olam hazeh olam haba. The world to come is not like this world. Ha'olam haba, in the world to come, ein bo lo achila velo shtia, there is no eating and no drinking, velo periyav rivya, and no reproduction, velo maso mata, no business, velo kina, no jealousy, lo sina, no hatred, velo takaros, which is another type of synonym for hatred.
Competition.
Okay, excellent. Ela, rather, tzadikim yoshvin, the tzadikim, the righteous people, will sit, the atroseyem birasheyem, and their crowns will be on their heads, the nehanim miziv hashchina, and they will take pleasure from the splendor of the shchina, shenemar vayechezu es ha'elokim vayochlu vayishtu, that somehow just seeing the shchina can give a person sustenance and give a person pleasure just like eating and drinking. So the question is, how are we supposed to interpret this statement of Chazal? Let me just summarize what the issues are here, and then we'll open up the floor once again for comments. How are we supposed to understand this statement of Chazal? So the Rambam asserts the following. Says the Rambam, there's no eating and there's no drinking. So why do I need a mouth? And why do I need a stomach? And why do I need all of the bodily systems that God gives us now for the purpose of digesting food and getting nourishment? If our nourishment is going to come from proximity to the Shekhinah, why do we need all of the bodily systems that right now are designed solely to give us, to help us derive nourishment from foods that are found in nature? And therefore, says the Rambam, it can't be, God is not going to create a body that has no purpose. Why would God create something with no purpose? If the purpose of the mouth is for ingestion, and in Olam Haba there won't be any ingestion, so why will God create a purposeless mouth? That's the question of the Rambam. And therefore, why will God create a purposeless stomach? Maybe God should just make a little microphone and put the soul into a little microphone so that it could speak. That's That's kind of how the Rambam says it. He says, what do you mean? You'll tell me that since we don't need legs because we're not going to need to go chasing our food to different places, and we won't need arms because we're not going to need to manipulate anything because we're going to get everything just by... Maybe that's what it means. Mitzvos betelos asalavo. That's a shir unto itself. But... So basically the Rambam says if there's no eating and drinking, there's no need for the body the way that the body is now. So then the Rambam says, and you'll tell me that maybe God will create the body in a perfect circle, everyone will just be in orbs, then what would be the point of that? Why would God need to create an orb? Like just let him bring the souls back. So that's the position of the Rambam based on this Gemara. However, there are a number of textual inferences from this Gemara that seem to go against the Rambam. You have a... Okay. So, the first textual inference is the following. The Gemara lists seven things that will not be in existence in Olam Haba. Eating, drinking, period of Rivya, business, hatred, jealousy. It sounds like this is not a comprehensive list. That these particular things will not be present in Olam Haba. However, bodies are not on the list. There are many other things that are not on the list also. It doesn't say that there won't be speech, as you pointed out. So it must be that these things are unique in their absence from Olam Haba, and other elements of the physical world will, in actuality, be present in Olam Haba. That's one inference that can be drawn from this Gemara against the Rambam. It's these seven things which will be unique in their absence, and every other element of physicality will be present in Olam Haba. That is one... That's number two. Very important, but it's actually number three. What's number two? It's the word right beforehand. Yoshvim. Is it possible for a soul to sit?
Yeah, but we use those terminology all the time because we don't have the language to describe this.
And it just means to rest.
When we do that, when they do Jimmy Otto the angel,
why are we getting all stuck up? That doesn't mean he's sitting there. He's existing there.
I have a problem when it's all over the place.
That's good, Moshe.
So what we've gotten now into, if you'll take a look at the first section here where I summarize some of the major issues, we've just stumbled upon one of the major issues that informs this debate, a major methodological issue, and that is the simple meaning of Agadah. Obviously, everyone agrees that the simple meaning of the word Yoshev means to sit. And the simple meaning of the word atara birosh, a crown on the head, means a crown on the head, like a yarmulke. Mm-hmm. So that's the simple meaning. However, one has the potential to allegorize, to say that it's only an allusion, that it's a remez, that it's a hint at some sort of a more abstract, a more profound, a more conceptual concept. And that is what the Rambam says. The Rambam and his defenders say that you can't and should not read every Agada literally. Indeed, perhaps the first and the primary manner, the first and primary way of reading Agadita is the figurative way and not the literal way. But the Ramah says, what do you mean? The first way that we should read it should be the literal way. And only if there's some major, major difficulty with the literal way should we go on and interpret it and allegorize it and say that it's only figurative. So this is, we've stumbled across an important methodological issue which informs the two sides of this particular debate. So we have, again, the Rambam says, what's the point of a body if there won't be any achila ushtia? Therefore, there must be no body. And the Rambam says, but look at the text. There won't be masa umaton, but other elements of physicality will exist. And then also it says there's yeshiva, and there are rashim, there are heads, and there are ataros, there are crowns. And therefore, it sounds like Olam Haba is a place where there is physicality. The Rambam responds, don't read this Agadah literally. There's so much evidence, it's so compelling that there will not be physicality in Olam Haba that we are compelled to interpret this statement figuratively. Let's
say that the Shamah looked in the shape, your human shape. You could recognize your facial features in the Shamah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what some of the physicality. So you have the shape of the body, but not, you don't act the same way. You don't walk, maybe, or whatever. I don't know the detail, but I read that the Shama looks the same. And actually, when you move, your hands are like tied up under your legs. And some people who came back and described different things. So that's some people who had that experience and they were
granted
some islands to back and
the world experience.
And those are some of the things you mentioned.
So let's see for a second. What you're saying is actually very close to the Rambam, even though I don't know if the Rambam will be so happy with the evidence, but what you're saying is very close to what the Rambam says. And the Rambam, let's read it, it's the third source here. We're going to skip the second source for a moment. The Rambam writes, Ha'olam haba, the world to come, in bo gufu gviya, there's no body, Ela nafshos ha-tzadikim bilvad, only the souls of the tzadikim, below guf, without a body, kimal achei ha-shares, like the angels. Hoil the ainbo gviyos, and because there are no baddies, ainbo lo achila velo shtia, there's no eating and drinking, velo davar mikad varim shegufos bnei adam tzrichin lahem ba'olam hazeh, and neither will there be anything from anything that the baddies need in this world. Velo yarad davar min advarim shema'arin legufos ba'olam hazeh, nothing will occur to people in the world to come that occurs to people because of their bodies in this world. There won't be any illness, for instance. And also, to go in yeshiva, ve'amida, there won't be sitting or standing, v'sheina umisa, sleep, death, etzev, uschot, there won't be sadness. That's very interesting. The Rambam thinks that sadness is a property of the body, not a property of the mind. And schok as well, there won't be any laughter, because that also is a property of the body and not a property of the mind. So there, you can go back and forth. Does he mean the action of laughter, or does he mean the emotion of mirth? Not 100% clear. V'chayotzei bahen, and things similar to them. Kach amru chachamim arishonim. This is what the early chachamim said. Quote from the Gemara in Brachos that we just read. Ha'olam haba ein bo lo achila v'lo shtia v'lo tashmesh ela tzadikin yoshvim atro seyem barashayim v'nehenin miziv hashechina. So he quotes this statement of Chazal to support his opinion that there will be no baddies in the world to come. Harein is barer l'cha, says the Rambam. It should be clear to you now. She'in sham gof, that there's no baddie. Because there is no eating and drinking. So then he turns and addresses some of the contrary evidence. That which Chazal said, tzadikin yoshvin, that they sit, that they will be sitting. Derech chida amru, they said it like a riddle, like a parable, like a figure of speech.
Similar to the way that people sit on earth.
Precisely, kilomar hatzadikim mitzuyin sham, they will exist there, they will be found there. Below amalu, below yegia, because when a person is standing, he's burning more energy. When he's sitting down, he's much more relaxed. So when it says tzadikim yoshvin, it means that they won't have difficult exertions. They'll be relaxed. The kain zesha amru atroseyen dirasheyen. What do Chazal mean when they say crowns on their heads? Klomar means to say da'as sheyadu. The things, the knowledge that they knew, the knowledge that they acquired. That's what it means, atroseyen birasheyen. It means the knowledge that they acquired.
The whole thought is on top of the head, in other words.
Shabiglala, yeah, we'll get there in a Shabiglala, Zahu l'chayeho olam haba. The Rambam here is stating that a person is zoche to olam haba by perfecting his understanding, by perfecting his comprehension. To the degree that a person's comprehension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, of how HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world, of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's values are, to the degree that a person comprehends that accurately, to that degree he will enjoy Olam Haba. So the Rambam is saying that the ataros, the crowns on the head, are an allusion, they're a metaphor for the comprehension that a person has of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hanhaga, of his practices, of his values, etc. And those will be what brings a person and what determines a person's level in Olam Haba.
It's interesting to say, you know, it doesn't say Akrasham Alorsham.
Birashayam. Mm-hmm. That's
Filin Shebarosh.
It's inside.
Mm-hmm. Again, that's a literal reading that supports the Rambam. So after it's derech chida amru, it's a metaphor. Yes.
We did say Nishma. We should not have said Vinishma.
Well, I do. It says here that you said that to the extent that we understand his ways.
This is Shita's Rambam. The prevalent perception, I think, nowadays, if you took a survey of people on the street, most people would tell you not like the Rambam. Most people would tell you that the purpose of mitzvos, that really that mitzvos are the ticket to Olam Haba, and not a person's understanding. And as long as a person does all the mitzvos properly and as properly as he can, so he will get the highest level of Olam Haba, regardless of whether he comprehends Hashem properly or not. I think that's the common perception. That is not the opinion of the Rambam. The Rambam has a very unique opinion amongst the Rishonim in this regard, and the Rambam actually believes that the mitzvos are only secondary to understanding Hashem. He writes, I have to check again where, that the mitzvos are sort of an indirect way of achieving understanding of Hashem. If a person does all the mitzvos properly, so it will give them, through the experience of performing the mitzvos, it will give them some sort of a deep subconscious awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But it's the awareness for the Rambam that provides a ticket to Olam Haba. And again, this is not the opinion of most Rishonim, but working within the Rambam does say this. I actually thought that this is why the Rambam believes that Vervas is Nebuch Apikiris is Eichet Apikiris. That's a Yiddish line that I memorized properly long ago, which means that a person who is an Apikiris and who has incorrect comprehension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but he has that incorrect comprehension through no fault of his own, is nonetheless an Apikiris and will not get his ticket to Olam Haba. So the question is, why is he losing his level in Olam Haba simply because of something that someone else did to him? So the Rambam will tell you, because it's really comprehension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's the ticket to Olam Haba, and regardless of whether a person fails to comprehend HaKadosh Baruch Hu properly through fault of his own or through no fault of his own, if he doesn't have the ticket, he can't get in. So that happens. That's the Shita of Rambam. The Chazon Ish disagrees. The Chazon Ish says that Vervas is Nebuch Apikiris is Nisht Apikiris. That even a person who is an Apikiris, a person who is an Apikiris through no fault of his own, that he was brainwashed, so to speak, Tinuk Shenishba, right, is not treated as Apikiris. He will get into Olam Haba because he's a no-fault Apikiris. But again, it's not the position of the Rambam. The Rambam does seem to hold that if a person is an Apikiris, it makes no difference why he doesn't have that ticket.
But he has to be a Talmud Chochem to be an Apikiris. Somebody said to his friend, you know, I'm an Apikiris. He says, who made you a Talmud Chochem?
They have this. Again, that's probably for the Chazon Ish, but not for the Rambam. So that's what the Rambam means when he says that the ataros perosh are the da'as sheyadu, the knowledge, the comprehension that they acquired, shebiglala zachu lechayeha olam haba. That was their ticket. That was what gave them the merit to get into Olam Haba. Mitsuya Yimayan, that das will stay with them and will crown them in Olam Haba. V'hiyaha atarah shalahen, that will be their crown. Ki'inan sh'amar Shlomo, just like Shlomo says in Shir HaShirim, ba'atarah she'itarah lo imo, which the Rambam interprets again figuratively as referring to the knowledge that Shlomo HaMelech acquired. V'harehu omer, and this is his biggest raya, that the concept of an atara b'rosh, a crown on the head, can be interpreted as a figure of speech, because the pasuk itself says, v'simchas olam al rosham, eternal happiness will be upon their heads. The ena simcha guf, happiness is not something concrete, it's not something physical. You can't point and say, oh, there's happiness on your head. there's happiness on your head. You can't point at happiness and say that happiness is resting on a person's head. Rather, it's a figure of speech. So too over here, the crown, even though a crown is a physical thing, but it could also be a figure of speech with reference to chachma. And mahu zehu she'amru nehrim yitzev hashchina sheyodin u'masigin me'amitas HaKadosh Baruch Hu ma'she'enam yodim v'hin beguf ha'afel hashafel. That's, I think, a reference also to what you mentioned earlier, that even though here we don't have full comprehension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we only have partial comprehension, but in Olam Haba, says the Rambam, where we'll be freed from the shackles of physicality that currently inhibit our intellect, in Olam Haba, where there won't be that physicality holding us back, we will have a much more vast comprehension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is the Rambam's interpretation of the Gemara in Brachos. As we mentioned, the Rambam was compelled, in order to say that there is an Olam Haba, which doesn't have physicality, to say that after Tchiyas HaMeisim, all of the bodies are going to pass away. That people will be resurrected, and then they will die again. So I think that there's a very strong raya to the Rambam from a Gemara in Masechta Shabbos, which is an important and fundamental Gemara with regard to this dispute for other reasons. But I believe that this Gemara is a very strong raya to the Rambam. The Gemara tells us, Amru lo the Rebbe Eliezer. The background for this Gemara is a dispute in the Mishnayos about whether a sword or a spear or a bow and arrow are considered to be a masoi, a burden on Shabbos, the same way that a hammer and nails would be considered a burden on a person who walks outside from a Rosh HaYachid to a Rosh HaRabim, or vice versa, from a Rosh HaRabim to a Rosh HaYachid, or who carries them four amos in a Rosh HaRabim, will have violated Shabbos. One opinion says that just like if one carries hammer and nails for four amos in Rosh HaRabim, that it will be a violation of Shabbos. So too, even if he's wearing his ornamental sword in its scabbard, for four amos in Rosh HaRabim, he's in violation of Hotzah, and he's violated Shabbos. The second opinion says it's not true. A sword is an article of clothing, just like an earring is an article of clothing, or a tie pin is an article of clothing. So a sword is also an article of clothing. It's not a burden. It's not simply a tool. So the Gemara has the following debate about this Mishnah. It says, if they're tachshitin, if they really are articles of clothing, mipnei ma hein betalin, Limos HaMashiach. Why won't there be swords in the times of Mashiach? After all, swords are articles of clothing. No one says there won't be pants in the Limos HaMashiach. No one says there won't be shirts in the Limos HaMashiach. No one says there won't be brooches and tie pins and earrings in the Limos HaMashiach. So if all of those things are going to be around the Limos HaMashiach, and a sword is the same as all of those things, why won't there be swords in the Limos HaMashiach? How do we know there's no swords? That's a famous pasuk. Swords to plowshares, but it's too hard for some to tin. So. Yes, precisely.
But you're talking about
Yemos HaMashiach. Meaning, if it's clothing, why won't there be swords just like all other types of clothing? So Amar Lahen, he said the fisha inon tzrichin, that you still need all the other types of clothing, pants and shirts and stuff. You still need for dignity, but swords you won't even need for that. Shenemar lo yisag goyal goy cherev, that somehow or other, when the functionality of a sword disappears, so then its aesthetic value will disappear as well. However, in the present age where swords are functional, they also have aesthetic value more so than hammers and nails. That seems to be the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer. So the Gemara asks, why should it be that function and aesthetics are interwoven? Why can't we say that if it's a noy, if it's a tachshit, if it's an adornment, if it's an ornament, nowadays, that even when it loses all of its functionality, it will remain ornamental? And to that, Amar Abaye, midi dahava ashraga b'teyara, that the light, a candle, in the middle of the day doesn't do anything. It's not even considered to be beautiful. And so too a sword, when it loses all of its utility, will not be considered beautiful at all, as opposed to earrings or brooches or tie pins, which even though they have no utility, they're still considered beautiful, perhaps because they never had utility to begin with, and they were made only for beauty. It's the relationship between function and beauty is beyond what we're discussing here. I'm just mentioning it because of the, it leads us into a discussion about the Yemos HaMashiach. Upligad Shmuel.
What are you talking about, the functionality of a sword?
The function of a sword is to chop people into little pieces.
To get close to someone and dig it in.
Yeah.
But so once in the old times that the Torah talks about was all used with a sword. So every man had a sword on his belt. Every man had one. Because the world was more in a primitive shape. So there was no security. So the talk about having no more sword. Could it be possible that this person had a window into the future and saw that everything is done with computers?
They stab people with computers, definitely.
The bombs are sent with computers with more accuracy. There's no one need to get close to dig a sword in someone.
That's where in the Ikbaz of the Mashiach. We're living in the... Right, Mashiach is around the corner, so we've already dispensed with the swords, and we're in the age... Unfortunately, it hasn't yet been the fulfillment of the prophecy that the guards, the Eivim Keves, that the wolf and the lamb will dwell together... So they accept that there's a restaurant in Manhattan that where they do that? No. But I don't think that they serve wolf there. No. So
he used to call it arm and leg.
That's a steakhouse.
So there will not be any swords lost in Lavo. However, says the Gemara, Shmuel holds that there will be swords lost in Lavo. Sorry, in the Yemos HaMashiach. The Amar Pligod Shmuel, the Amar Shmuel in Bein HaOlam Hazeh, the Yemos HaMashiach. Ela Shibud Galios Belvad. The only difference between the present era and the era of Yemos HaMashiach is in the present era, so the Jewish nation is at the mercy of the other nations. And in the Yemos HaMashiach, it'll be the opposite way around. The Jewish nation will no longer be at the mercy of the other nations. Shibud Malchios, that's the only thing that will change. But war? There will still be war in the Yemos HaMashiach, or at least there will still be the necessity for having enough force to wage war, and therefore swords will still be something which have functional and therefore aesthetic value. The Amar Shmuel Ein Beino Olam Hazeh LeYemos HaMashiach Ela Shibud Galios Bilvad Shenemar Ki Lo Yechdal Avyon Mikarav Haaretz. Poverty will never cease. And the Gemara says, "Misayeyele the Rabbi Chia bar Abba." This is a proof to Rabbi Chia bar Abba. The Amar Rabbi Chia bar Abba, "Kol Neviim Lo Nisnabu Ela Limos HaMashiach." All the prophecies. If you go through the prophecies, beginning from Sefer Yoshua and ending with Sefer Malachi, they're only describing the Yemos HaMashiach, the time when the world will still be physical. Aval LeOlam Haba, Olam Haba. It's something that no one set their eyes on other than God. So there are two reasons why this statement of Shmuel or of Rabbi Chia bar Abba can be approved to the Rambam. Let's take them one by one. First of all, according to the Rambam, there is a clear demarcation between Yemos HaMashiach and Olam Haba. Yemos HaMashiach will be physical, and Olam Haba will be spiritual. So therefore, we understand there is an era called Yemos HaMashiach, and another era called Olam Haba, which will come after Yemos HaMashiach, and the dividing line between those two eras is very distinct. It will be the death of all of the bodies that are resurrected, and the beginning of a new world in which only the souls participate.
Only the resurrected souls. Only the one who is resurrected.
Whoever deserves Olam Haba will participate.
So some people have two deaths?
Two deaths.
The Rambam says everyone will have two deaths.
Everyone?
Yeah.
Oh, is that?
I prefer to think of it as two lives. So according to the Rambam, it's easy to understand. But according to the Ramah says that once the dead come back to life, once there is resurrection, those bodies that are reunited with their souls will never die. So what is it that differentiates the Yemos HaMashiach from the Olam Haba? So there are definitely answers to the question, but they're not as simple answers to come by as the Rambam's answer. The Rambam might tell you that in Yemos HaMashiach only the most righteous will come back to life, but in Olam Haba even a broader range of people will come back to life. The Rambam might tell you that in Yemos HaMashiach there won't be judgment on the evildoers, and in Olam Haba will begin with a divine judgment of every single person who ever lived. The Rambam might tell you that the Yemos HaMashiach will be a more natural world, relatively speaking, and that Olam Haba will see an even greater proliferation of miracles than the Yemos HaMashiach saw. Those are all possibilities. However, they're not as clear and as distinct as the Rambam, who says that the difference between Yemos HaMashiach and Olam Haba is that Yemos HaMashiach is a physical world, and Olam Haba, which follows Yemos HaMashiach, is a spiritual world. So that's why I think that this statement of the Gemara, which splits the two eras very, very distinctly, works better with the Rambam's approach than with the approach of the Ramah. The second statement in this Gemara that would seem to support the Rambam is the idea that Olam Haba Ayin Lo Ra'asa Elohim Zulasecha. No eye has seen it, God, but yours. Which the Rambam elsewhere says, this means that it's impossible to describe to a person a spiritual pleasure, an abstract pleasure. What we experience now in our bodies, what we're able to see with our eyes and hear with our ears and smell with our noses, are all physical pleasures. And so if you want to describe to a person what a pleasure is, you can say, oh, have you ever eaten something that tasted really good? Have you ever seen a sight that was really, really beautiful, that was very pleasant? And a person can say yes. And then you can say to them, have you ever been honored? Has someone ever shown you a tremendous amount of respect that you enjoyed? And they'll say yes. And then you can say, well, just like you see that a physical pleasure is distinct from a psychological and emotional pleasure, an emotional pleasure is distinct from a spiritual pleasure. But imagine if a person never experienced kavod. He never experienced the pleasure of kavod or the pleasure of happiness, and you're trying to describe it to him and saying, trying to tell him, if you ever eaten a good steak, well, getting kavod is like having a good steak. So it's not comparable at all.
That's the way the expression Tom Gadai, he ate something very tasty, he said.
I don't know.
Tom Gadai.
It has a taste of Gan Eden. But it's a metaphor, because we can't really describe what Gan Eden will be. And so we're forced to use an allegory, we're forced to use some sort of a simile. So the Rambam says that the pleasure that the soul will be able to experience is so different and so much more elevated than the pleasure that bodies are able to experience, that it was beyond the ability of the prophets to articulate in human language.
Even Ruach HaKodesh and Nevi'os, even the ecstasy, whatever that is.
They may have been able to perceive it, but to articulate it, language doesn't have the right words. And so therefore, Ayin Lo Ra'asa Elohim Zulasecha. It's something which human eye, human perception, for the vast majority of people, are unable to perceive it. However, according to the Ramah, so the Olam Haba, the world to come that will be after Yemos HaMashiach, will also be a physical world. And therefore, what's the great difficulty for the Nevi'im to describe Olam Haba? It's a physical world. There will be bodies. So it should be possible to an extent, at the very least, for the Nevi'im, yes, to describe what will transpire in Olam Haba. And so the Rambam invokes this pasuk here, Ayin lo ra'asa Elokim zula secha, to a certain extent as a proof for his position that there will be nothing in Olam Haba that is analogous to Olam Hazeh. That there's no way at all to describe it because the circumstances will be radically different from the circumstances that prevail nowadays.
So in other words, there would be a tremendous change of pace.
Yeah.
Were you saying that there is physicality involved?
Not for the Rambam. For the Rambam, the Olam Haba, again, there's the world is divided into the Olam Hazeh, this world, which will be followed by the Yemos HaMashiach, the period of Mashiach, which will in turn be followed by the Olam Haba. And the dispute that we're focusing on between the Rambam and the Ramah concerns the nature of this Olam Haba, of this world to come that will follow the days of Mashiach.
It's a transition period.
The Yemos HaMashiach can be viewed as a transition between Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, precisely. It's the last. The Ramban says there may be something after that, but we're not supposed to think about it.
Well, we can't even think about what we're up to now. But in Olam Haba, then we're talking about a place where there is no time or space, in addition to there's no physicality, no passage of time and no concept of space.
Probably not.
As far as physicality, will the person rise healthy or in the same situation as whether he died?
You're talking about Triad HaMetim, really. Triad HaMetim is where the bodies will resurrect. And in Triad HaMetim, they're supposed to heal, you know, they'll come and heal. You know, there will be no mumim anymore once they are.
Everybody will be healthy.
Like Chazal say that at Ma'amad Har Sinai. At Har Sinai, so God healed all of the Jews. So there are psukim that seem to indicate that at some point after Tfiyat HaMeisim, there will be a similar universal healing. So the question is, when will that be? Will that be at the moment that every mace comes to life, that they'll be healed? Or will it be at some point that God will say, okay, now everyone line up and everyone will be healed?
Will they look like he?
There are different opinions. The Rambam actually makes a comment about this. He says that the basic principle that everyone has to know is that there will be Tchiyas HaMeisim. And you know, the details are a little bit more murky, and you know, they're an area of interest, but the basic principle that he wants everyone to know is that there will be a Tchiyas HaMeisim. That's something that the Pasuk says in the end of Sefer Daniel. Everyone has to know that, and the details, you know, you can find out what the different opinions are.
If the Tachlis is Olam Haba, what's the purpose of Tchiyas HaMeisim? What is the Tachlis?
It's a very good question. The Gemara in Sanhedrin says that in order for justice to be served, so every single element that participated in a mitzvah or participated in an avera should be rewarded for the mitzvahs or punished for the averos. And so if only the soul were rewarded and punished, then it would mean that justice vis-a-vis the body is not being served. The body also deserves to be rewarded for the mitzvos that it had a portion in, and it also deserves to be punished for the averos that it took part in. And therefore, the Yemos HaMashiach with the Tchiyas HaMeisim might be in order to make sure that the body gets its share of the reward and punishment for those things that it participated in.
But if you can't repay for a mitzvah, no hazeh, the body, then when you said that a mitzvah, you cannot pay someone for a mitzvah that they do. So if he has a mason for coming back in his physical body, how do you pay for a mitzvah and how do you punish for an avera?
The soul will get a spiritual pleasure, which it will be much more capable of appreciating. But at the same time, the body will get as much pleasure as it's capable of getting, because that's the only type of reward that the body can appreciate. But there still needs to be a world in which the baddies receive, you know, their reward for their participation in the mitzvos. There is an interesting tangential controversy that I wanted to mention also, because I think it's important, that sort of comes from this dispute between the Rambam and the Ramah. There is a Gemara that says that the tzaddikim who will be resurrected during Techiyas HaMesim will never be Chozer L'Afram. They'll never return to their dust.
To their what?
To their dust. Meaning the body decomposes into dust, and then the dust will be resurrected into a body. And says the Gemara, there's two different versions. One of them says tzaddikim, who are going to live in the future, will never go back to their dust. And the other Gersa says mesim, all of the people who die will not return to the dust. So this seems, on the face of it, to support the Ramah. It's certainly, if you say that it means mesim, sha'asidim lichyos, the dead who are eventually going to be resurrected will not return to their dust, that will support the opinion of the Ramah that says that once the bodies are reconstituted, once they're reunited with their souls, then there will no longer be any death. It's interesting that some of the Rambam's defenders make the exact opposite inference from this Gemara. They say that tzaddikim, the righteous people that will come back to life, will never go back to the dust. However, everyone else perhaps will go back to dust. And that they want to bring as a raya for the Rambam, who says that there will be Misa after Tchias HaMesim. Here, the exact quote, I don't have it on the sheet. Okay, I don't have it here either. However, the Ramah says that the inference should be a little bit different. It doesn't mean that there will be tzaddikim who come in the Yemos HaMashiach and then will live forever, and other people who arise in Yemos HaMashiach will not live forever. Rather, the Ramah says, what this means is that only the biggest tzaddikim will experience resurrection early on in the Yemos HaMashiach. The ordinary tzaddikim, the ordinary people, will only experience resurrection in Olam Haba. The tzaddikim will have an early resurrection, and ordinary people will have a later resurrection. That, by the way, is the answer for the Ramah, one of the answers, as to what differentiates Yemos HaMashiach from Olam Haba. For the Rambam, Yemos HaMashiach is physical and Olam Haba is only spiritual. For the Ramah, Yemos HaMashiach is a time when the tzaddikim will be resurrected, and Olam Haba is a time when everyone will be resurrected. And how does the Ramah get this from the statement that I just quoted? He says that tzaddikim who will live in Yemos HaMashiach, they will live forever, and the other people will also live forever, but they won't be from Yemos HaMashiach. They will only be resurrected in Olam Haba. That's the Ramah's inference. The tzaddikim, why do we mention tzaddikim in this statement? We mention tzaddikim because the statement refers to those who will come back to life in the Messianic era. And those are only the tzaddikim. The people who are not tzaddikim will come back to eternal life, true, but only after the Messianic era ends and the Olam Haba begins. And the Ramah draws a second inference, and this is the last source on the page here. He says, from the Gemara in Ksubos, Yodea haya Yaakov avinu, shetzadik gamur haya. Yaakov knew that he was a perfect tzaddik. And so the Gemara goes on and says, and if people in Chutz La'aretz will come back to life, which is what we paskin, that even those who are buried in Chutz La'aretz will be resurrected. So the question is, lama hitriach es banav? Why did he ask his sons to bury him in Eretz Yisrael? And the answer is, shema lo yizkel limichilos, because there are these tunnels that will, the body will roll through the tunnels to Eretz Yisrael, and he didn't want to have to worry about these tunnels, and so he said, bury me in Eretz Yisrael. So the Ramah is bothered. Why say Yodea haya shetzadik gamur haya? what if he wasn't a tzaddik gum, or what if he was an ordinary tzaddik or an ordinary person? So wouldn't he be able to say the same thing? So why the expression yodeya haya shatzadik gamur haya? So the Ramah says the purpose of the Gemara's adding in that statement is because Yaakov Avinu knew that we're dealing here with Yemos HaMashiach, and in Yemos HaMashiach only the tzaddikim gemurim will be the ones to be resurrected, and that's why he was only worried about this whole thing because he knew that he was a tzaddik gamur, that he was going to be zocheh to the early resurrection, and that's why the Gemara has this question. But if he was only an ordinary person who was going to be resurrected in the world to come after the Yemos HaMashiach, so then the whole issue would be moot there. There's no discussion about whether Eretz Yisrael, Chutz Laaretz, it's clear that everyone, no matter what their status, no matter where they're buried, will be resurrected. The only question is for those who are going to experience an early resurrection. So I think we've basically covered most of the issues that are here at the top of the sheet. We've talked about whether to read psukim in the simple way or read them figuratively. That was the Simchas Olam Al Rosham, the Rambam's proof that sometimes the psukim speak in figures of speech, and therefore perhaps we can interpret other things as figures of speech as well. The simple meaning of the Agadata, Tzadikim Yoshvim, are they sitting literally, or is it just Matsui below Amal B'Yigi'ah, that they're going to have an easy time? We've talked about a little bit, although not everything that I wanted to say, about the similarity of the Messianic era to contemporary times. That was the Gemara in Shabbos, where the Gemara said, according to one opinion, so the only difference between the present time and the Yemos HaMashiach is whether or not the Jewish nation will be at the mercy of other nations. And then the Gemara brought a second opinion and said that no, that in the Yemos HaMashiach, force will be unnecessary because no, everyone will be peaceful. The aggressive nature of man will change and men will only be peaceful. So there's a question conceptually about whether the Messianic era will be for the most part similar to the present circumstances, or whether the Messianic era will be incredibly and vastly different from the present circumstances. We also dealt with the second list, the substantial issues, the machlokot, about what exactly will take place. Number one, will people have bodies in the world to come in Olam Haba? We saw that the Rambam says categorically no. The Ramah says absolutely yes. And we saw some of the textual and some of the philosophical evidence that both sides marshal for their opinions. Will people die after Tchias HaMeisim, after the resurrection? Again, we saw that the Rambam says yes, and the Ramah says no. And finally, will ordinary people experience resurrection in the Messianic age, where the Ramah says definitely not, only the tzaddikim gemurim will experience early resurrection, ordinary people will have to wait for Olam Haba. But the Rambam, by his silence on the matter, will seem to indicate that even ordinary people will experience Tchias HaMeisim in the times of Mashiach. I want to end off with a very interesting comment that I saw in a sefer that I'm totally not familiar with, but it's quoted in the back of the Frankel Rambam in their anthology called the Sefer Halikutim. It's a sefer called Arba'a Turei Evan. It shouldn't be confused with the Arba'a Turim that were written by Rav Yaakov ben Asher, the son of the Rosh. And this sefer, Arba'a Turei Evan, makes the following observation. There are numerous chazals that tell us that Mashiach can come in one of two ways. Let me just give you three examples of such chazals. Example number one, there's a contradiction in Psukim. One pasuk says that Mashiach will come riding on a donkey like a pauper, and another pasuk says that Mashiach will come riding on a swift cloud. Of Kal, a swift cloud. So the question is, which is Mashiach going to ride? So Chazal answer, if Klal Yisrael is Zocheh, then he'll come riding on a swift cloud. If Klal Yisrael is not Zocheh, so then he'll come riding on a donkey like a pauper. That's number one. Number two, there's a contradiction in Psukim. One pasuk says that Mashiach will come only after a certain number of years have elapsed. And another pasuk says that Mashiach will come sooner. It's possible for Mashiach to come even before that number of years elapse. And so therefore, Chazal again say, if Klal Yisrael is Zocheh, Mashiach will come swiftly, even sooner than those number of years. But if Klal Yisrael is not Zocheh, so then Mashiach will only come after that number of years elapse. A third place where Chazal employ this idea to resolve a contradiction. There's one place where a pasuk says that Mashiach will only come if everyone in Klal Yisrael is a tzaddik, and in another place it says that when there's no tzaddikim left, when everyone is gone down to the low levels of tumah, that's when Mashiach is going to come. So which one will it be? Will Mashiach's arrival be preceded by everyone attaining a tremendously high standard of righteousness, or chas v'shalom the opposite? Will Mashiach's arrival be preceded by everyone falling chas v'shalom to a low level of tumah? So again, Chazal say it depends. Mashiach can come in one of two ways. Either he'll come because everyone is very righteous, and then he'll come swiftly riding on a swift cloud, or he'll come when everyone is fallen, and then he'll come like a pauper riding on a donkey, and only at the end of an allotted amount of time. So the Sefer Arba Turi Evan does something beautiful. I'm not sure whether I'm convinced by this, but I think it's very beautiful nonetheless, to resolve the machloket between the Rambam and the Ramah. He says it really depends on what the situation of Klal Yisrael is before Mashiach comes. That if everyone is really tzaddikim, then they will merit a Yemos HaMashiach that have all the superlative descriptions that are described by the Rishonim here, that maybe everyone will come back to life and maybe it'll be eternal survival for the Banis. However, if we're not zocha to that Mashiach coming mitoch zichuyos of Klal Yisrael, but rather we have Mashiach come because Nebuch HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs to bail us out, so then perhaps the Yemos HaMashiach and the Olam Haba will be a little bit different, and there may still be death afterwards, etc. So that's the resolution that the Sefer Arba Turi Evan propounds to this machlokas. He says we'll make peace now between the Rambam and the Ramah after all the beautiful clarifications of difficult statements of Chazal that emerge from this debate. At the end of the day, there is a possibility that not only will the wolf and the sheep live together in Olam Haba, but also the Rambam and the Ramah will meet and shake hands and make peace in Olam Haba.